Recently, we've explored quite a few of the limitations of the socialized mind that often holds people back in their professional lives. We've seen how the limitations of this stage of adult development reveal themselves in the experience of being overwhelmed, feeling distracted, or struggling to work with difficult people. In each case, we explored ways that a qualitatively more complex mind can reveal new approaches to overcoming these day-to-day challenges. In this installment of our series, we're going to peer into how the emergence of the self-authoring mind gives rise to new capabilities for asserting yourself. We'll explore specific moves you can try on right away, later on today, this week, or when the right situation presents itself. So, what does it mean to assert yourself? Taking a stand for what is important to you is an essential skill. Setting boundaries is a critical capability, both the boundaries you place on parts of yourself and the limits you set on others are foundational for your professional development. Furthermore, allowing greater room for your colleagues to thrive around you is a key feature of a more mature and productive self-management of internal resources and resources that support your job and your organization. These all critically depend on your ability to assert yourself. To begin, asserting yourself depends upon your ability to see, accept, and work with differences. The more skillful you are with differences, the better you'll be at generating and, where necessary, sustaining differences. This is because asserting yourself invokes your distinctness. It inherently sets you apart from the people around you. It means your behaviors, both in action and in words, are highlighting the elements of you that make you different from others. Asserting yourself means you're placing some facet or facets of yourself forward that are, at least from your perspective, qualitatively better in some fashion. Ultimately, we put ourselves forward because we wish to hold ground, take ground, and to help improve things, make things better for ourselves, the people around us, the institutions that employ us, and the people and systems that they serve. Now, just to be clear, the assertiveness I'm talking about is not the same thing as you sharing your entitled preferences, nor is asserting yourself to be confused with you advancing a self-centered agenda. Asserting yourself and acting selfish are worlds apart from one another. The self-absorbed demands of entitlement are a demonstration of a lingering adolescent mentality that weakens the maturity of adulthood. Generally speaking, these selfish aims end jobs and careers rather than advancing them. To truly assert yourself is to strategically insert yourself in order to create changes both in culture and the outcomes a culture is producing. These adaptations come from an intention to generate greater value. This value isn't just your own value, but it's aiming to increase the generativity of the culture and organization you participate in. One of the ways I encourage you to differentiate between your self-centered drives and the more mature demonstrations of your uniqueness is to measure the impact on the relationships and culture you participate in before you take an assertive step. There are two all-important questions to ask yourself here. How is you taking a stand serving your professional relationships? And are your demonstrations of difference corrosive to the cultures and professional relationships you participate with day in and day out? The answers to these questions can reveal several key dynamics I want to encourage you to manage carefully. First, sometimes our pronounced movements into the self-authoring mind can leave a wave of disconnection in our relationships. This is because as we outgrow the limitations of the socialized mind, we likely felt held back by our cultural surround. Once we find some footing to step beyond it, it can be tempting to leave it in the dust rather abruptly. Do not make this mistake. Relationships matter. While it might be convenient to think that some are disposable, the unavoidable truth is that all of them matter. As you are stepping into new expressions of yourself beyond the familiar limitations of the socialized mind, be sure to attend to the relationships around you with great care. Don't let yourself participate in the fantasy that your new capabilities grant you license to rupture relationships in the name of distinguishing or asserting yourself. A second dynamic to pay attention to closely is when an assertion ends up being a channel for you to voice younger, more self-centered demands. When this happens, you'll see your declarations eroding your professional standards, not refining them. Work through these less complex imperial sensibilities in private conversations, not in the public sphere. Lastly, the amount of difference a culture can tolerate is something you should pay careful attention to. Asserting yourself is not just about you feeling good about your integrity. Your assertions are ultimately stands you're taking in order to serve the whole in a more nuanced and effective way. Keep this in mind, your assertions need to maintain a skillful balance between what's in your most integrous heart and the professional culture you're in. The right amount of tension between the two will yield creative and innovative returns. Too much attention in favor of you asserting yourself can backfire, while too little of your assertions will simply perpetuate the status quo. Asserting yourself is a complex maneuver. It means taking immaculate care of what matters most to you in your work. When done well, it invites others to participate with a larger culture of mind that is capable of producing greater organizational adaptability and generativity. In my forthcoming book on elegant relationships, I'm exploring 8 defining features of the self-authoring mind. Here, I just want to unpack 3 of these features together. The first one I call intimacy in distinctness, which I've just been describing in the last few minutes. This feature involves a new capacity to bring greater intimacy and connection, to serve the professional connections and relationships that matter most, while simultaneously becoming more distinct. The underlying insight here is that we can use differences to push people away, or we can use them to bring people together in new ways. Asserting yourself with greater skill is a demonstration of this ability. Another facet of the inner architecture of the self-authoring mind is what I call self-directing integrity. If you're going to assert yourself in ways that challenge and support your professional relationships and culture, while simultaneously establishing and maintaining your important differences, your inner authority must be discovered, nurtured, and refined. Principally, this inner authority means that your mind can envision a cohesive ideology that belongs to you and that you've created through your personal and professional experience. Here's an important distinction I want you to closely track, so carefully focus in on what I'm saying. Relax your body, lengthen your exhale, and sharpen your mind. Asserting yourself is not the same thing as demonstrating something you learned from someone else. On the surface, these two expressions may look quite similar. For example, you might see an opportunity to demonstrate something of value that you learned from someone else with greater expertise than your own. You might share a message about some of the dynamics of distractibility that you learned from me. By doing so, you may be challenging the culture you work in to change in ways that can help your organization be more focused. And there are plenty of instances where this is a wise and strategic move to make professionally. And you should feel encouraged to draw on the expertise of others as sources of wisdom and insight. However, for our purposes today, this isn't the kind of self-assertion we are exploring. To illustrate the difference, let's stick with the example of you articulating an insight around distractibility to others you work with. If you are genuinely asserting yourself, you would be sharing your own expertise about your experience of distractibility firsthand. You wouldn't be recounting someone else's expertise, research, or experience. Instead, your assertions would rest upon your own living experience and your own value claims about what's important to you. The difference is that when you're asserting yourself, the distinctions you make are original compositions authored by you. So, in this example, where you're sharing some valuable insights about distractibility because you want to improve your professional culture, the content of what you share may be very similar, yet underneath, two entirely different developmental dynamics are at play. The first is more reminiscent of imitation, while the second is a larger demonstration of personal and professional mastery. Asserting yourself is a function of a growing mastery. This is our aim. Without mastery, genuinely asserting yourself simply isn't possible. Fundamentally, asserting yourself is an expression of your self-directing integrity. You become an expression of an internally sculpted directive. When you assert yourself from this self-directed integrity, you become a more integrous person. You become more aligned and committed to an internal authority that is reshaping, resculpting, and reauthoring you in more mature ways. The last feature that I want to highlight of the self-authoring mind is clear and direct communication. This is happening when clear and specific requests are put forth and explicit and straightforward assertions are made. If you have access to this stage of development, then it's likely that you take pride in the level of specificity and nuance that you can bring to your command of language. If this experience is foreign to you, I encourage you to start taking pride in your ability to be ever increasingly clear and direct in your communication. Asserting yourself requires that you are careful, deliberate, and refined in your messaging. Extend special attention to unpack and precisely explain what you want to communicate with the people around you. Think through your messaging from many perspectives. Cook your message many times within the laboratory of your own mind, not to mention some trusted colleagues and mentors, and allow your inner authority to progressively refine your messaging. What's implicit in your focus on specificity, accuracy, and clarity of your communication is an interest in highlighting the differences you're inhabiting. This is a subtle point, so pay attention here. Using refined and nuanced language itself is a demonstration of your essential and important differences, apart from whatever message you're actually sharing. So don't rush into your assertions. Cook them and refine your messaging carefully. Be very specific about the phrases, meanings, contexts, and so forth. The more clear and the more direct, the better. All right, let's turn our attention to how you can start applying what we just covered. What follows next are three basic exercises that can help you assert yourself in new and more refined ways. First, reflect. One of the differences between the socialized mind and the self-authoring mind is that the socialized mind identifies with and is subsumed by the professional roles handed to it by the organizations and expectations that surround it. In contrast, the next developmental step authors, fashions, and creates the roles that its larger identity participates with. So, ask yourself, are your professional roles largely established by the culture and institutional surround, or are your professional roles authored and tailored by you? Is there an unquestioned way you believe you're supposed to show up at work? Or is there a trustable inner voice negotiating your best course of action? One of the ways I've helped leaders to successfully establish greater access to the self-authoring mind's self-directing integrity is by reflecting on their professional roles. With virtually every client I've worked with, situating what matters most in relationship to their professional roles helped to clarify their messaging and the context for their assertions. Furthermore, reflecting on the roles that are in many ways handed to you enables you to get a firmer grasp on the roles you're inhabiting. The more you reflect on these roles, the greater freedom and choice you'll have about which roles you inhabit. Typically, roles manage behavior, but with genuine self-assertions, you're fashioning an identity that can manage personal and professional roles, relationships, and the actions that follow. Remember, asserting yourself is fundamentally about highlighting, brightening, and sharpening the contrasts of difference. I encourage you to reflect on the important differences you see between the professional roles the culture you serve has entrusted you with and the ones you must fashion for yourself. What is most important for you? Remember, we aren't interested in what you've been told you're supposed to hold as most important. What is it that you most value? How can your larger integrity serve the essential responsibilities of your job? And what boundaries are likely required to help you and the professional relationships your organization depends on? So here's your first step. Privately reflect on your professional roles and ask yourself what ultimately matters most to you and your refining integrity. Step two, keep going. Continue to reflect on these key insights. It's not sufficient to reflect only once or twice on these questions. The more rigorous the reflection, the greater hold you have on the various roles that typically have hold of you. This will ultimately free you up to manage yourself with greater nuance instead of being dependent on your cultural surroundings to manage you. Step three, birth your reflections in conversation with trusted colleagues, friends, and family. These are part reflection and part assertion. As I mentioned above, cook your messaging thoroughly. Experiment with the energetics of strong, clear, and direct assertions of yourself. And allow yourself to receive some key feedback around how others experience these parts of yourself. Course correct and refine as necessary. Remember, just because you received feedback doesn't mean you need to implement it. Trust your inner authority to distinguish between what's of value to be integrated and what is to be appreciated and valued, yet not implemented. These initial conversations are a big step because you're leaving the confines of private reflections and bringing newer parts of yourself into your social spheres. Starting out small is often a useful first step to help you acclimatize to the reality that something essential within you is making its way into your professional public life. Now, for your second exercise, get clear and direct. You are already honing in on your messaging, but your next step is to take a deeper cut. Once you have your assertion in mind, I strongly recommend trimming. These are the two most important questions to ask. What's not needed, and what can be simplified? The self-authoring mind loves complexity, nuance, and refined distinctions. And this is great for you. However, it also means that many people won't follow you. Your integrity is big, and chances are in expressing it, you could go on a long monologue in order to fully demonstrate your assertions. I generally don't recommend this. When this is happening, it's a sign of a premature public sharing. So, before you assert, take out what's not needed. From your perspective, all of this will feel as though it's needed. After all, you've been attuning to your greatest integrity, what you most value, and what's more important to you. However, you also need to pick up the perspectives of your audience in order to find out what's not needed. Remember what we talked about in the beginning, your assertions are not just about you expressing yourself, they're about your contribution to creating a more generative culture. If your audience can't follow you, your assertions won't carry much influence. You'll know when it's appropriate to trim something out when you really love the way you framed something, but ultimately you can feel that it's not at the heart of what needs to be communicated. Save it for another time. Let it go. Bury it. Be willing to cut out what's not needed. Simplify your message. Make it accessible. Don't be cumbersome and complex. Be elegant in your messaging. Your last exercise is not about preparation, but rather something to practice when you're actually living your new assertion in public, with attention focused on you and what matters most to your heart. When we assert ourselves, we often get consumed by how it feels to put ourselves out there in new ways. For many of us, it can be nerve-wracking, anxiety-provoking, and in some cases, flat-out terrifying. When these emotional textures are circulating through our bodies, it's often hard to attend to the relationships around you. We're often too busy trying to manage our own anxiety. To counteract this deep neurological conditioning, I want you to pay close attention to what's going on in the people around you when you assert yourself. This is a good opportunity for you to thank yourself for simplifying your message, because it will give you more room to listen for feedback. Attune to the relationships. Sense into what's going on within the people you work with. Most importantly, make contact with them. Make eye contact and hold it. Pause or slow down when necessary. Whatever you do, don't get too intoxicated by your own differences. Hold fast to the assertions that are most near and dear to you. This is not the time to back down. Share what you feel is going to genuinely serve the greater whole. At the same time, draw the professional relationships in around you. Invite them in closer to you. Let them join or become part of how you think about issues, make plans, and strategize to move forward. Get curious about their input, opinions, and suggestions. Empower the people around you to contribute while you also stay true to the boundaries and differences that matter most to you. Holding on to these relationships starts with holding them in your attention while you're asserting your differences. This one subtle difference can make the difference between you having a lasting impact or you being politely or not so politely dismissed. In closing, I'd like to offer you a way to think about your practice of asserting yourself. A metaphor a good friend and colleague gave to me is to imagine that your self-generated assertions of integrity are like a refined, elegant, and well-honed sword. This sword can be used for the benefit of others, to protect what's valuable and perhaps what's vulnerable. And this sword can also cut through the barriers that are holding you and your organization back from what's most generative and of value. In skilled hands, it's a tremendously valuable asset, and if it's handled carelessly, it can be destructive. You wouldn't use this sword to chop vegetables for dinner or to conduct a delicate surgery. The key to its power is refining its deft use and application in ways that most serve the whole. And in order to become skillful at using it, we have to be willing to pick it up and start learning how to swing it. I encourage you to invest carefully in reflecting, clarifying, simplifying, and trimming your assertions as you practice asserting yourself. Attend closely to the relationships you're in, but do not lose hold of the assertions that matter most to you.